Hey, welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you joining me. Let's go up the down staircase, kids, in the outdoor. Going to try and make some sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the friggin' absurd. Let's get to it. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Wherever you're listening in this big wide world of ours, I am so heartened to have you taking a little bit of time out of your day. I'm trying to keep these things 30 to 40 minutes somewhere in there. That is already beyond most people's ability to pay attention to just about anything. Long form used to mean long form radio, like you'd talk for an hour. Who's got time for an hour anymore? We want things in 7 minutes or less. That's where our mindset has gone. And our attention span has shrunk to. There's a lot of studies on that stuff, and I think that's just the byproduct of all the technology that's begging our attention. And I don't know that that's a good or bad thing. I think that sometimes it spills over into, quote, real life. If you get conditioned to do something, it starts to show up in other areas, and if you can't keep your attention span more than about 4 or 5 minutes, waiting in line at the bank or at the supermarket becomes an excruciating experience. I think our patience gene is being sawed away step by step by all the technology that's supposed to make our lives easier. I'm not real sure about that. Today is about technology to some degree. And as I always maintain on this show, I never want to turn on this microphone, which I have such respect for, and your time that I have respect for, and just blather away. I really monitored myself, and I never used to do this, quite frankly. You know, when you're on the air every day, as I was for a very, very long time, and still am now in this international show that I do called The Bridge, the last thing I want to do sometimes is spend more time behind the microphone. So this is more of a select VIP group, the Life 2.0 podcast listeners, and of course, my staunch subscribers who ante up $20 a month, $5 a week, 66 cents a day, to support the work that I do here and keep it going, and I am so thankful for them. And we've gained some and lost some and gained some, and then we lost a lot. And then we gained some back, and there were some technical problems, and all that kind of just levels itself out. And I was telling somebody the other day, at one point when I was doing Oprah Radio on Saturdays, I had my own Saturday show, even though I was Dr. Oz's senior producer and Gene Chatsky and Bob Green and Nate Berkus and all these people you've heard of on television, I produced their shows. I also did my own show. Because, I'm not busy enough. I got to do a show as well. And I also had these things called power thoughts. They were 1 minute long, back to our attention span, deal there. And I did those on the channel as well. But at one point on a Saturday morning, when the numbers would come in, there'd be 2.8 million people listening to me rant and rave about whatever was going on. And 99.9% of the time I had guests on because I only had an hour to work with, and I just didn't want to, bore people to death with my bloviation and verbal expectoration. So we had some great guests and great conversations and all like that. But you're talking about nearly 3 million people listening to this show. I have no idea how many people listen to this one. Now I don't keep count anymore. It was kind of neat to know that at one time you're hitting some high notes. But I was talking about with this this idea of numbers with a friend of mine who's in the business. And I said, I can recall, those days of 2.8, nearly 3 million people listening to the John St. Augustine show on Oprah Radio. And I should find some of that stuff, replay it. It doesn't even exist anymore. Oprah's going to sue me? I don't think so. I should really pull some of those out. I have some CDs somewhere, compact discs that has the whole open and everything and Oprah on there. It's kind of cool. Anyway, maybe I'll do like a throwback Thursday now and again and put some of that stuff up. But I was recalling a time before I was hitting 2.8 million people on the radio of doing a lot of speaking, which is a passion of mine, to get up on stage and just hammer it like chopped meat. I'm really well aware of the fact that I've been given something to do in my mind and something to say and things to talk about. And I will not shy back from that. I've never have, never will. It's just not my nature. And I was doing a lot of programs at one time. And, outside of the TED Talks, and I've spoken internationally, it's all well and good. But this early on experience was interesting to me. I'd been speaking for about a year, and a woman was in one of the audiences that I spoke to, and she came up afterwards, and she was a promoter, and she wanted to engage me to give a talk and all that kind of stuff. And I put up the money to rent the Schaumburg Prairie Center for the Arts Theater, just northwest of Chicago. And interestingly enough, I had actually worked for the Village of Schaumburg years prior in the sewer department, actually. Had a great time. Still in touch with some of those guys. You want to talk about earning your money? I earned it. It was so much fun. Are you going to pay me to do this stuff? You want me to drive a front loader? Get paid double overtime to push snow around? I'm in. So anyway, I had a great time there, and we rented this theater. And it was a big buildup, and you know, it was in the, we bought airtime and newspaper time and all that kind of stuff. I can't remember what the snafu was, but on the night of the event, she came into the green room as I'm getting all, you know, ready for stage stuff. You know, I had hair then, so I had to comb my hair and get dressed up a little bit for the audience. And no idea how many people are going to be there. And, you know, they buy the ticket at the door and all that kind of thing. She walked in and she said, "Well, John, I have good news and bad news. What do you want first?" I said, "I want the good news first. Let's just start on a positive note." She goes, "Well, the good news is people have showed up." I said, "That's fantastic. What's the bad news?" She said, "There's only two of them." "Excuse me? There's two. The place holds 12, 13, 1400 people. I don't know. Two people came? After renting the theater and buying the, you know, the advertising and all the things you're supposed to do." And again, I don't recall, was there, there might have been another big event in the area that same night. I can't remember. But I remember there was two people there. And in that moment, I had a decision. The decision was I could call it a day. Nobody would fault me for that, I'm sure. You know, I think it was like 10 bucks to get in. $20 would go back to these people. And that would be it. I'd be like, "Well, I'm glad that was over with." Or I could do what I came there to do. And that's what I did. And so I walked out on stage and I looked at this in cavernous, empty stadium of a place. And there was these two people sitting front and center. And it was just so jarring to me. But I knew if I would go the direction of being somehow a victim of this, that look what happened, and this is shitty, and well, all that stuff that goes with it, I would be doing myself and them a disservice. So they showed up. I had them put the lights down a little bit. I sat on the edge of the stage, and we talked for about an hour, hour and 10 minutes, hour 15, whatever it was, about everything that I wanted to present to the cast of thousands. I spoke to two people. And I think something inside switched for me that night. Number one is, and the thing, I think, not just one, but the thing was, if I'm going to only do it for 2.8 million and not two, I should not be doing this at all. And so now when I do this Life 2.0 podcast, I'm very choosy about what I spend the time on, what I put out there, what the message might be, and what I can share from my experiences that may be worth your time. Because I remember what it was like to sit there for an hour and 50 minutes. And these two people left. They clapped at the end. Yay. It was really something. So this podcast today is about something that I find obviously is part of the human condition and has been and always will be. But the older I get, the less I'm able to deal with it. And so here's how it started. If you have email, almost every person on the planet has email these days. You're probably getting in your junk box all kind of weird stuff, right? And about a month ago, I got an email that went right to my junk box. And I was going through it one day, and I realized that it was actually, or appeared to be, from the director of the FBI, Christopher Wray. Otherwise, what? I got an email from the FBI director, Christopher Wray? And it said, "Attention beneficiary." So the email was from the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and it said, "Attention beneficiary," which wasn't to me directly, but obviously they wanted me to read this. Well, the first hit was the word "attention" was spelled A-T-T-E-N-S-I-O-N. That's not how it's spelled. So I looked at it, I'm like, okay, so let's just go on with this. And the email really, you know, kind of laid it out. The message says that the recipient, which is me, I have the right to receive $10 million, U.S. money, free and clear. But it's somehow related to the FBI and the Bank of America and the United Nations Financial Department, was all approved by them to give me $10 million. What a great email to get. And it goes on to say, quote, "We just got an information from the Bank of America, and they have loaded your," meaning mine, "actually $10.7 million in a check and submit to the Cargo Logistics Courier Delivery Service. They want to send it to me immediately, right to my doorstep." And then it goes on to ask for my personal information, full name, address, phone number. Underneath it says, "We request that you confirm your mailing address to ensure conformity with our record for immediate dispatch of your parcel to you. Only valid residential office addresses and postal addresses are certified to be okay. And besides all that, it makes available a contact of another guy at the FBI in case I, you know, want to ask questions. Somebody named Special Agent Richard Bowen." And they put this supposed email address in there. So I'm supposed to believe that an FBI special agent is using a Yahoo address, that anybody could just check in with this guy. They also go on to talk about that this check weighs more than 4 pounds, and that it's an unusual amount of weight, we know, but there must be added paperwork in there. Maybe they're just sending the cash. It's a check and cash. I don't have no idea. The most interesting thing to note is that, you know, number one, the FBI is not sending anybody emails about just giving money away. So now FBI is now dispersing cash with the Bank of America and the United Nations. And the second part of it is, which is what this is really all about. Somebody's going to believe this, right? Somebody is going to believe this and connect, because they wouldn't be doing this. These scam artists, they wouldn't be doing it if it didn't work on some level somewhere. You know, so it's like, if you give us all your information, we'll get back to you with $10.7 million, and somebody's going to fill this in and send it back, and they're going to have access to your accounts, whatever. Because it wouldn't exist if it hadn't worked before somewhere. I'm sure a few million of these go out, and they're hoping for three or two or even one, and they can cash in. So I started looking at how many people or what the risk is for these things. And some of the latest things that I could find is that 6 out of 10 Americans are at risk for falling for what they're called phishing scams, P-H-I-S-I-N-G, phishing scams. And they have a difficult time, 6 out of 10 Americans have a difficult time identifying fraudulent emails, okay? And I'm sure it has to do with, you know, age and education and age and what, I don't know what the reason exactly is, but people are easily fooled, right? The research I came across asked consumers if they'd ever fallen victim to a phishing attack. 24% said they had, and 22% admitted they weren't sure. And the survey also asked those who had fallen victim to identify the type of attack. Email phishing was the top answer, 59%. Followed by going to a website, or telephone phishing, which is like a call center scam. It's like when you get a phone call because the IRS is going to come arrest you because you didn't pay your taxes. And if you pay over, you know, now with a gift card, they'll leave you alone. The IRS is not calling anybody for money. Doesn't happen. The FBI is not dispersing it, and the IRS is not calling to collect it. But people do it anyway. And it goes on to say that, you know, some of the things you should do is install strong antivirus. I never see this stuff till I go to the junk email. Check your emails, look them over. If the spelling's bad, from someone like the director of the FBI, hello, Stevie Wonder could see it's a, you know, a joke. Don't send your information to anybody. Now, this all sounds really simple, right? But millions of people fall prey to this stuff. And just to back this up, I actually went and looked, made sure that Christopher Wray, he has been held over as the director of FBI. President Biden said, hey, stick around. I like what you're doing. I like your job. Do it. But I didn't see anything about doling out cash. He ain't doling out no simoleons, no dead presidents, $10.7 million. Not going to happen. With all that being said, it led me to another part of the rabbit hole of human behavior, which I have a difficult time with. And the reason I do is because social media has put all of us in the same swimming pool. Smart people, intelligent people, average intelligence, nitwits, halfwits, and dimwits. We're all in this. I don't mean to offend anybody, but I really don't care at this point who's offended. I mean, you turn on the TV during the day and you're offended, or whatever. I can't control if you're offended by nitwit, halfwit, or dimwit, you might be one. And that's the way I'm saying it. And so after I got this email, I actually deleted it. Of course I deleted it. You know, I've gotten 50 of these over the past years. If it's not the FBI doling out cash, then it's somebody else that, you know, some woman whose husband died and left a lot of money and found my name in a note and I'm worth millions and she, you know. Again, this stuff only works if people buy into it. And that's how it continues going on. But that's the deeper part of this river for me, is that for whatever reason, whatever that thing is that allows people to buy into the bullshit, I don't know what it is every reason, right? I mean, if you're an elderly person, there's that scam going around where you get an email from somebody and your grandson or granddaughter's been in a horrible car accident and somehow this person got your email from the kid's phone. And if you just send the money and, you know, if you're concerned, you're like, okay, where do I send it? And it's like, well, put it in a gift card. Probably not a real good idea. And I actually, one of the more high profile ones, I have a friend of mine who's, you know, CPA, accountant, and money manager for some serious talent Hollywood music types. And I got that email about a year ago and said, so-and-so was in an accident and he needs money because he's stuck in some foreign land and blah, blah, blah. There's only about 20 people on this guy's that I know of. 20 people can reach this guy via email. I happen to be one of them and it's great and everything. But when I checked in with him on a text, he said, you know, are you effing kidding me? He got hacked. And I'm not in, Tangiers, you know, in a jail after a car accident, need money to get bail out. So when I look at this stuff, all of these scams are banking on the fact that some nitwit, halfwit, or dimwit, or very scared person is going to buy into it and choke up information and vomit it up and say, here. And then they get taken. And it happens all the time. So I'm going to put the older folks off to the side. I give them a break. I give them a pass. It's easy, I suppose, if you're looking and you're not used to this stuff and you're not up to speed to it, to say, oh my gosh, I got to do something. And, you know, there was this one on the news here recently where people are walking around, going up to doors, knocking on doors, and they're talking about home repair and roof repair and free estimates. Well, who charges for estimates anymore anyway? But free estimates, and while they're busy at the front door and trying to get all our information, you know, the people are casing the house and there's been some robberies and things like that. So, you know, you want to open the door, you want to engage with people, fine. But to start spitting out information, are you usually home during the day? Oh, no, I'm gone all day. Gee, thanks. So, but all that being said, I'm going to put all those folks over to the side, give them a pass in this little rant of mine. And I want to go to the nitwits, the halfwits, and the dimwits. I'm trying to do this the best way that I can. And the reason I'm even doing this is because I can see where this becomes a bigger problem than it should be. I was watching a little clip of Anderson Cooper, the CNN anchor, who's been around for years and years and years and years. And he's doing an interview with a guy who's a conspiracy theorist. And the guy was convinced for a few years that Anderson Cooper and other Hollywood types, I don't know if he's a Hollywood type, but Hollywood types, media types, were doing horrible things to children that I'm not even going to repeat, and more and more and more and more. And apparently, at some point, the light bulb went off for this nitwit, and he became maybe a halfwit, or moved up to being a dimwit. So before I continue, a nitwit, really, I think, would be someone who's a very small brain, like the size of a nit, or a hair louse. That's a nitwit. The brain is smaller than physically than it should be. Okay, so maybe they don't have the capacity. You should see my fingers. They're like this. They're just a little bit apart. A halfwit then would have really a brain that's the normal size, but they don't. The capacity is just not there to discern bullshit from the truth, or they just don't care. And then, of course, at the top of that food chain is a dimwit. Normal brain, normal intelligence, but easily bought into conspiracy stuff and all the crap that goes on. So let's say this guy started out as a nitwit and thought, hey, Anderson Cooper and all the rest of these people on this list are doing these horrible things to children. Somewhere the bell went off, the light went on a little bit, and he moved from nitwit to halfwit. So his brain expanded a little bit. He considered the fact that maybe it's not true, but it flies in the face of the conspiracy theory that gave him some sense of connection and power to something bigger than being a nitwit. People don't take that lightly. If you've been a nitwit your whole life and you get a little power and some recognition and you feel good about yourself, it's like, hey, I don't care what they're throwing at me. This is power I've never had, and I'm not giving it up real easy. But this guy, to his credit, moved from nitwit to halfwit and considered the fact that it's possible that the guy that's on CNN every night for years isn't doing horrible things to children like he was told over and over and over and over again. This is an adult man. Like, you know, he's like 50 years old, this guy. And then really the evolutionary ladder shook when he went from a halfwit to a dimwit, which means at least he decided or made the thought or considered the fact that it's not true. That it's not true. And so I'm watching this clip of Anderson Cooper talking to this guy who at once was a nitwit, then was a halfwit, now is just a dimwit. And he apologized to Anderson Cooper on television for believing the conspiracy theories that kept him as a nitwit, but gave him the opportunity to become a halfwit and eventually a dimwit. So here's the thing. How do you deal with all this? At least I'm asking myself this rhetorically out loud. It's harder and harder for me. You know, a lot of this stuff, the halfwits, the nitwits, the dimwits, they were, you know, that whole concept of what's going on in the world, you know, and the lower life form activity that used to be, you know, in different pockets underground to some degree. You know, they all congregate together and all that kind of stuff and keep it to yourself. And okay, fine. And you all feel better because you're together? Okay, good. But now, because of social media, the nitwits, the halfwits, and the dimwits are everywhere. And, you know, I learned a long time ago that the last thing anyone with any sense of intelligence and a fully functioning Abdullah Oblongata should do is engage in intelligent conversation with a nitwit, a halfwit, or a dimwit. What's the point? Then you become one of them. Then you start going down the evolutionary ladder into the land of dimwits, halfwits, and nitwits. And you're just solidifying, fortifying, and encouraging more of the same behavior. So about a year ago, I stopped writing something called the Wednesday Rant. I used to write these rants, put them on Facebook on Wednesdays, and I got such odd and interesting feedback. You know, I was just, here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm seeing. And I would have somebody get on and say, you know, you are just so full of shit. The world's coming to an end. But they go on and on and on. And then somebody would read the exact same words and go, oh boy, I really needed that. So the line in the middle of those two, it isn't about whether people agree or disagree with me. The line in the middle of those two is fascinating to me. How do you look at Anderson Cooper, for example, who's been doing CNN for, I don't know, 20 years? I have no clue. And say, yeah, that's the guy there. He's doing these things to kids. I know it. And there's this constant feed of bullshit to reinforce that. How do you do that? I mean, see, I don't have the brain capacity. I'm not a nitwit. I'm not a halfwit. Sometimes I've been a dimwit, but not the other two wits. I'm not a nitwit. I'm not a halfwit. I've been a dimwit, got out of dimwittedness at times, and started to wake up and grow up. And I've learned as well, just because you're a certain physical age doesn't mean emotionally and mentally and sometimes spiritually that you've evolved at all. I know a lot of 60-year-old dimwits, halfwits, and nitwits. And I love them just for who they are. I just don't engage in intelligent conversation with them. It's a waste of time. And so my point in this whole little deal here today, keeping mind of the fact that, you know, our attention spans are incredibly short and that around every corner is an opportunity disguised usually as a liability. And so moving forward, hopefully, from nitwit to halfwit to dimwit, that more of this will come about, that there are people who maybe through no fault of their own were scammed, just like, hey, Christopher Ray's got $10.7 million. Just give me all your information and we'll take it from here, that they're done with that, or that they realize that they've been scammed on a lot of levels and they were taken and they bought into a line of bullshit, which isn't true on any level. And so my only feedback on this and what prompted the whole thing was to at least offer some information instead of just desperation, which is around us all the time, that it's possible. And that's my hope for this. If one guy goes, you mean he's not really drinking the blood of little kids? Hell no. If one guy does that, maybe it somehow gives permission for some other person to go, really? And then they go from nitwit to halfwit to dimwit. And next thing you know, they're starting to move up the ladder. Maybe things change a little bit. I'm not expecting critical mass to happen overnight. I'm not expecting all of us to sit down and sing Kumbaya. But I will tell you this. If you always do what you've always done, you will always get what you've always got. And at some point, if the light bulb goes off and you don't like what you're getting, you got to stop doing what you're doing to get a different result. And just that little clip I watched with this guy and Anderson Cooper and the email that I got, I thought, you know, again, it was a delete for me instantaneously. And watching this video clip, I caught, how could somebody be this way? And then you realize that everything is learned behavior. And the way we see the world for so much of us is really embedded by the time we're young people, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And then if that sticks there and those biases are fed there throughout your life, you even go looking for it to make sure you stay in line, it's very difficult to undo that. So whatever the deal was, whatever the leverage point was, whatever the popping of the bubble for this guy that went, wait a minute, I don't believe that anymore. And then the nuts to get on television and talk to the guy who you thought for years was doing horrible things to children, I give this guy a lot of credit. I wouldn't give him his own show, but I give him a lot of credit. And so while in these days that unsocial media is so prevalent and that it's so easy to be a keyboard warrior and barf stuff up constantly, the one thing for those of us who at least have risen above the line of dimwittedness and maybe cross back sometimes, that's okay, is that the delete button's great. And if you're on social media, unfollowing people's great. Not letting it in is the best way to keep it out, which obviously is all about choice. Until next time, be safe. Thanks for listening. Adios.